This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of July 31st, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 249. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the big deal feature. I'll introduce you to Taiwan's happy fisherman, who is originally from British Columbia. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or did you hear about the name changes in BC this summer? Powell River Regional Hospital on the Sunshine Coast is now Quethet General Hospital. The village of Queen Charlotte on Haida Gwaii is now Dajing Gids. Trutch Street in Victoria is now Sayit Street. It's all part of the so-called decolonization trend to indigenize the public domain. The intention is noble, to recognize the inhabitants of Canada's west coast before the 18th century Spanish and English explorers and the 19th century colonists. But does a new name on a hospital, on a street sign, or on a town change anything? British Columbians need to have a discussion about this now. This is British Columbia Day weekend, and no doubt someone will again float the idea of changing the province's name, because it refers to the British and also Christopher Columbus. May I suggest a cost-benefit analysis before we go any further? The cost of rebranding BC would be enormous. It's not as easy as just changing a name on a Google map. There are bigger priorities than a new name for the province. The pandemic is not over. The health and justice systems are breaking, if not broken already. We need to protect the environment and prepare for natural disasters. Homelessness and addiction, they only get worse. Have you seen the dire living conditions on the downtown east side of Vancouver? All stuff to think about. Happy British Columbia Day weekend. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast.
Hi, my name is Leo Seawald. In Chinese, Li Hao, 他们叫我好哥. Welcome on my boat. I came from Hong Kong about 11 years ago, and I'm originally from Canada. A few years ago, I even became Taiwanese because I love Taiwan so much. My plan is to go into every fishing harbor in Taiwan, and there are about 250 of them. If you like, join me on this expedition.
That is the voice of Taiwan's newest video star, Leo Seawald, host of The Happy Fisherman on the Taiwan Plus streaming channel and YouTube. Leo introduces viewers to the sights and sounds and tastes of the fishing industry in Taiwan. You'll meet the fishers who know the oceans best as they fish for black tuna, beltfish, eel, and crab to feed the 23 million people on the self-governing island the size of Vancouver Island. The Happy Fisherman is a fascinating outdoor travel and culinary show about getting fish out of the water around Taiwan, and it features a metaphorical fish out of water. Leo Seawald is a businessman and lawyer originally from Vancouver, now living in Taiwan and fluent in Mandarin. Full disclosure, Leo and I were both graduates of the Vancouver College class of 1988. I was glad to see Leo again when he came home to Vancouver in July. This interview was recorded at False Creek's Fisherman's Wharf in Vancouver during low tide after a scrumptious lunch at Go Fish.
We'll talk about coming back to Vancouver this summer and taking a break from production in Happy Fisherman.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. It's obviously great to be here. I mean, look at this. We're in the middle of a marina. The sun is shining. It's fantastic. And I'm surprised to see there are actually still a few commercial fishing boats here in downtown Vancouver. You wouldn't expect that. I mean, the rents here are so high for boat spots. It's great to see some fishing boats in. So I'm happy to be here, and I'm happy to talk to you about my show and explain some of this, the process of how I got there.
When did you decide to become a TV presenter on this very interesting show about the culture of Taiwan and the destinations of Taiwan?
So I retired about 3 years ago, and I've always had a boat in Taiwan, but I realized with what's called a yacht, you can't go into the fishing harbors. And it was been my dream to travel around and go to all of the fishing harbors in Taiwan, and I realized to do that, I'd have to get a fishing boat. So I went out and I took the course, a four-day course, and took the exam and became, I believe, Taiwan's only Western licensed commercial fisherman. Then I thought, well, Taiwan actually has around 230 plus fishing harbors, depending on how you count them. And I thought, if I actually go to each of these harbors, I don't think anyone's taken the time to do that. So maybe I should document that. And then the next thought was, well, I'm not really much of a documenter, so I should probably get somebody to help me with that. And so I talked to some friends of mine, and they thought, well, this would be an interesting story. And so we came across the idea of the Happy Fisherman. And the main point of the show is really to explore Taiwan from the sea, look at Taiwan from the ocean, talk about some of the interesting historical, cultural, and culinary aspects of these fishing harbors. You know, the fishermen in Taiwan are also going through a bit of a change right now. They're all in their 60s and 50s, late 50s and 70s. And that whole culture is changing because the younger generation doesn't want to do it. So at the same time, I thought I'd go and capture some of their stories and make a bit of a, you know, an archive of stories from some of these more interesting fishermen.
Yeah, some of your episodes are showing every aspect of fishing. You're showing the environmental aspect, the culinary aspect, the business aspect. It is so integral to the lives of Taiwanese because it is an island, of course, and because there are so many fishing harbors and fishing markets. The fishing markets are also very interesting. They operate at odd times of the day for Western standards, but you've gone there and you've shown what happens in the fishing markets overnight before the tourists arrive.
It's a lot packed into 15 minutes. Each episode is 15 minutes. I'm looking at maybe expanding it to 30 minutes, but I really just want to provide something for everybody. Some people are interested in the historical stuff, so we touch on that. Some people are more interested in the culinary aspects, so we touch on that. But for me, it's really, how does Taiwan look if you come across it from the ocean? And also, how much, give people an understanding of how much Taiwan is tied to the ocean. A lot of these historical harbors actually started as fishing harbors. So I just wanted to encapsulate all those different interests into one show. Wow, look at this place. It's a little past 3 in the morning, and we are at Geelong's Fish Market.
What is your favorite harbor so far, and favorite fish so far that you've discovered?
My favorite thing so far to catch has been a tuna, because it's very exciting. And you know, you see it in the on the U.S. programs, these giant fish. That's very interesting. But to me, it's actually just going out on the boat and going from harbor to harbor and exploring the real natural beauty of Taiwan that's most interesting to me. Each harbor has its own specific beauties, specific historical points. And I myself have learned so much about Taiwan just putting the show together.
And you've showcased the process, shown how people are out there in sometimes tough conditions, catching the beltfish, for instance, and even tougher conditions for someone who's hosting a TV show sometimes, the seasickness.
So I didn't know they were going to put that on there, but this show is, we don't cut anything out. I mean, it's true. I did get seasick, and I notice if I'm not driving my own boat, I'm more likely to get seasick. But what I'm trying to capture is the reality of it. I mean, the fishing industry, and you know this from the show in the U.S. called The Deadliest Catch, it is dangerous and hard work, and there's no difference in Taiwan. It is really a difficult lifestyle. They're up all hours of the day. The long hours, you know, they'll fish for 20 hours straight, then go back to the harbor, then they have to go sell the fish. And as you mentioned, the harbors, some of them start at 12 midnight and go till 4 in the morning. So the whole industry is governed by kind of the laws of the sea and the law of fishing, and you fish when you can catch. And so it's hard work, it's long hours, and also very dangerous sometimes.
What do you have planned for coming episodes?
Well, I got a real treat that I'm working on for August that I'll be filming. I'm going to go to Lanyu, and Lanyu is an island that is off the east coast of Taiwan. It has a very strong Aboriginal presence. They have some very historical methods of catching fish, and there are Australasian people there. They've been living there for 3 or 4 or 5,000 years. So I'm looking forward to catching that aspect, that cultural aspect of it as well. And also Lanyu itself is a particularly beautiful island. So I'm very much looking forward to that.
What should Westerners know about fishing in Taiwan? How it differs from the rest of the world? How it differs from Pacific Coast of North America, or differs from Europe?
Well, on a serious note, I think the Taiwanese fishing industry is going through a lot of change. As I mentioned, the fishermen are getting older, less people doing it, and also, like everywhere in the world, less fish to catch. But what you see, along with other parts of the world, is a move to more sustainable fishing methods. You don't see so much drag netting as you used to. You don't see so much netting at all. In fact, my boat, when I bought it, had a net license. I just gave that up because it's a lot easier. And that's typical of what's happening. They're moving to more sustainable methods. And that's very encouraging to see. On a humorous note, the one thing that you will see on Taiwanese fishing boats, or I should say not see, is a toilet. Until you get to a very large size of fishing boat, there's no toilet. So when I bought my boat, being on the smaller size, I instantly installed a toilet on it because, well, you can imagine. But large fishing boats in Taiwan, only amongst the very largest will have that feature. And I think the Western boats are a little more comfortable in that respect.
I guess you can't guess the name of this boat. The name of this boat is $4, which you probably don't know what that means. But in Taiwanese, $4 is a very important word. It's hotala, drink to the bottom of your glass. And I think that's a great name for this boat and a great way to explore Taiwan. Hotala!
Okay.
What would have been the highlights and the lowlights of producing?
I think it's very difficult to do. I mean, I come from a legal background, I come from a finance background. To do a TV show is difficult. To know what to say, to deliver it in one take, is surprisingly difficult. When you watch the masters like Anthony Bourdain, you just wonder how those guys do it. I mean, it's just so smooth and so crisp and so interesting. I find it very difficult. That's definitely the low light for me, because I find it so challenging. The highlight for me is I've learned so much, and I feel so privileged to go around to see some of Taiwan's most beautiful parts with my boat, and to have so much support from local fishermen, support from the government, and just get to see something that most people never get the chance to see, and that's been a real privilege.
Is there one destination so far that ranks above the others for fishing?
I think the east coast of Taiwan and Penghu on the west coast, those two areas have the most variety of sea life. They have coral reefs. They have a real diversity. And you also have the migratory fish like the sailfish and the tuna coming through. Those are fantastic. So both the west and east coast of Taiwan have those aspects of it that make it excellent for a show like mine.
And talk about being a Westerner. You're a bit of a fish out of water yourself. Any of the challenges you had to overcome in producing the show, in buying a fish boat, in fishing in Taiwan. Of course, you're smarter than many of us from the class of 1988. You went and learned Mandarin. Yeah. So that definitely helps to break the ice, to communicate in the language of the people of Taiwan. But what kind of challenges have you overcome in doing this project?
You know, I think the only challenge is that the fishing industry is a very traditional industry, so there's a lot of laws and regulations that you have to follow. My boat was trapped in one harbor for about a week because I didn't have the right paperwork, but that probably happens everywhere. I would say, other than that, for those of you who've been to Taiwan, they're amongst the most friendly people in the world, and they go over and beyond what it takes to make you feel welcome, make you get done what you need to do. So I've had so much support from the local community, from, as I said, from the fishermen, the government, that it really hasn't been that challenging from that perspective. I think if you've been to Taiwan, you know what I'm talking about. And if you haven't been, I recommend you go.
Well, of course, there is the brotherhood or sisterhood of mariners. Everyone helps each other, especially in stormy seas. Or wherever you go, or wherever, whatever language you speak.
So, Bob, it's interesting that you mentioned that. I was in Geelong just last week filming an episode, and there is a stone tablet that goes back to the Qing Dynasty. that records the law of the sea. And it's written in classical Chinese. And so it's 400 years old. And it says, you know, the people of Kaohsiung. The people of Kaohsiung are legally bound, even 400 years ago, to help all mariners. And whether they have problems with their boat and need repair, the people of Kaohsiung will be required to provide assistance. And if they see a boat out in the ocean that is being ravaged by typhoon, they're not allowed just to sit there and watch it. They actually need to rescue it. This law is over 400 years old. It comes from the Qing Dynasty government, and they required the people of China to provide assistance to all mariners. And so what you're talking about is actually something that goes back way, way, way before. It's rooted in ancient history.
And there are the Taiwanese community here in Vancouver, not just Taipei, but a lot of people from Kaohsiung in Vancouver, and there's people in Vancouver who want to bring the two cities closer together in an official friendship relationship through City Hall. So that's very interesting there, and it's got a lot of similarities to Vancouver. It's interesting that you talk about Kaohsiung. And you go back in further history, as a reference there, of course, you learned Mandarin and took your skills here in law and business overseas, first to Hong Kong, then to Taiwan. Talk about your career journey.
Yeah, and I'm lucky to have friends like Bob who I keep in touch with, but I've actually left Canada 22 years ago. I first went to Hong Kong and worked as a lawyer there and lived there for about 10 years. And then about 12 years ago, I moved to Taiwan and started working in the finance industry. So I worked for an insurance company called Manulife, as you know, and then I worked in BlackRock in asset management. So when I retired 3 years ago, I really just wanted to do things that are interesting to me and that I can see provide some benefit. And this show to me is a way to introduce Taiwan to the world. And that's, to me, that's a very worthwhile cause.
So where is the Happy Fisherman going in future seasons? You're talking about some of the upcoming episodes, but where can this go? And when can... can we see it on TV here on this side of the Pacific? We can, of course, see it on YouTube, where I highly recommend people go, and the Taiwan Plus website. But where is the future for the Happy Fisherman? Because it is a show that people should tune into. You learn a lot about Taiwan and a lot about fishing and a lot about being a Westerner adapting to Taiwan.
Yeah, I mean, keep in mind, there are 230-plus harbors. I've done probably about, I don't know, 15 or 20 so far. So there's a lot of material left to go. I think there's also other aspects of the show that we can look at. But I still have at least another year before I'm done with all the harbors. There are only 5 episodes out. There will be 24 by the end of this year. And then, you know, I think there's another year in that at least. And then we'll see what happens, right? I continue to live in Taiwan. I will continue to fish no matter what. And we'll just see if there's interesting content, I will continue to do it. If I run out of content, then that'll be that. But I don't see that a problem for the next short term.
What about an epic trip to actually circumnavigate Taiwan all in one trip? Is that something that that could be a possibility on the horizon someday?
I think I could do that. If I loaded up with enough gas, it'd be possible. It wouldn't take that long, actually. I think it would to circumnavigate Taiwan, probably about 2 days, 3 days.
Wow.
It's not that big.
No.
So, yeah, it could be done. I could do that. And maybe you'll come along.
Oh, I'd love to. I love Taiwan. Been there a number of times myself and recommend it. And recommend the seafood and the seafood harbors. And if you can get out in the water, Taiwan, definitely do.
I agree, Bob. Come right. Join me. Take your sickness medicine like I do sometimes, and we'll be good.
Well, thanks to Leo Seawald for talking to us on the Breaker.News podcast. Fisherman's Wharf in Vancouver on this very sunny summer day with low tide. We're amongst the vessels such as the Pacific Provider, as well as the Sundance the Second, and many other vessels here that are waiting out the low tide.
Thanks, Bob. It was great to talk to you again. Of course, great to see you again. I've been going up and down the Dansui River and Jilong River for 8 years. But I think now is the time to go out. Go out to the ocean.
go out to learn more and go to every fishing harbor in Taiwan to learn more about the history and the changes going on in the fishing industry in Taiwan. There are a lot of stories to be told, and I think you'll find it very interesting. I have my fishing license. I need to buy a fishing boat. Please join me and come along, and we will experience Taiwan from the sea.
That was Leo Seawald, the Happy Fisherman on The Happy Fisherman. You can find it on TaiwanPlus.com and on YouTube. Podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Taiwan news, Taiwan's government agencies badly in need of cybersecurity experts. IT capacity has been a weak link in Taiwan's government workforce, and the sensitivity of the issue means complex regulations for required personnel on different levels, Liberty Times said, citing cabinet officials. Flawed rules are also to blame for the lagging recruitment of needed staff, wrote Watch Out, an independent media outlet. The Cybersecurity Management Act fails to clearly define the criteria for a chief information security officer, making it difficult to hire qualified persons to head cybersecurity units. In Kyoto news, Japan tops global new COVID cases in the week to July 24th, according to the World Health Organization. Japan had the world's highest number of new coronavirus cases in the week to July 24th, with more than 969,000, according to the WHO. It was followed by the United States at around 860,000 new infections and Germany at about 570,000. There were over 6.6 million new cases globally in the week, up about 300,000 from the previous week. The pandemic is not over. In Hong Kong Free Press, ex-Hong Kong district councillor jailed for 7 months for shouting insults at police during protest. Li Chi Wang, former head of Sha Tin Council, was convicted of, quote, behaving in a noisy or disorderly manner in a public place, end quote. Li protested May 24, 2020 in Wan Chai against the National Anthem Ordinance and the National Security Law, which came into force a month later. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, Oregon allows self-serve gas during 100 degrees Fahrenheit heat wave. Governor Kate Brown declared a state of emergency from Monday through Sunday in 25 of Oregon's 36 counties. Following her declaration, the Oregon State Fire Marshal's office said that residents can pump their own gas during the emergency order to limit the amount of time that gas station attendants have to stand out in the heat. On King 5, man allegedly steals woman's car while posing as an employee on Seattle to Bainbridge Ferry. The suspect took a ferry worker vest from the employee's car and approached a female driver, asking for her keys. The female driver reluctantly handed over her keys to the suspect, who then drove off in the car before law enforcement could arrive, according to the Washington State Patrol. The suspect fled the Bainbridge dock, driving north on State Route 305 in a stolen 2006 Audi A3. In the Victoria Times Colonist, tiny homeowner, others being evicted from a chosen property. Residents told they are contravening a chosen bylaw and must vacate by August 31st. The municipality acted after receiving a complaint. Issues include concerns about water supply, electricity, sewage disposal, and building codes. Bryce Knutson pays $650 a month for the pad, sewer, and electrical hookups for the small house on wheels that he and his father built in Saskatoon 2 years ago. Meanwhile, Tiny Town can stay at Victoria's Royal Athletic Park lot until next March. The community dubbed Tiny Town was established out of shipping containers in the spring of 2021 as temporary housing for people at risk of homelessness. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
It don't matter what color you are, cause love will conquer hate, so you won't stand alone, you won't stand alone.
The virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to you. All 5.2 million of you, from the Pacific Coast to the Rockies, from the 49th parallel to the Yukon border. It's British Columbia Day. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of July 31st, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 31st of July in 1987, a tornado hit Edmonton, killing 27 people? Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.